Tales of a well-established lesbian. Chapter 58. There is 1 week of the year when all bets are off, if, that is, you're lucky enough to get the time off. And this year, I do have that odd week between Christmas and New Year off. Chocolate for breakfast, day drinking, spend the entire day in your pyjamas, or, if you're Shane, get a minimum of 3 to 4 workouts in. Whatever it is you want to do, this is the week for it. Both Ash and I are back from the home visits, and we may have been texting back and forth, and we may have decided to hang out. Turns out it wasn't just me who put their ex on the Christmas shopping list. I had a present for Ashley, and Ashley had something for me. Are things changing, or has the nostalgia that Christmas brings on got us both acting a little crazy? I mean, we're both definitely making an effort. Ash does seem to arrive on time these days, and I am learning to keep my smart-ass comments to myself. With both of us on our best behaviour, it hasn't taken us long to get back to that familiar level of intimacy. You know, leaning in closer than we should, whispering in each other's ears. My hand doesn't need to be that low on her back as I return to my seat while we're out for a drink. It's clear where all of this is going, and I'll be honest, it's certainly not where Rodney the Snake resides. I've got the flat to myself, so nobody really needs to know, and we don't have to explain ourselves. For which I am especially grateful, because I don't really have a good answer. No, I don't think this is the best idea ever, but I don't have a better one. And while Ashley continues to make the effort she's making, I'm going to continue to believe that these changes are real. Maybe it is a willing suspension of disbelief. Maybe it is in part because I'm lonely. Because I miss being kissed. Don't get me wrong, I do love to get laid, but good God, I do love kissing. And so while Ash might be coming back to mine, I am going to be keeping things PG-13. For now, anyway. Aside from being mildly annoyed with myself for not keeping things simple and clear with Ashley, the rest of the week is a little hazy and quite a lot lazy. Now that I've seen my mum and dad recently, I can go and get my hair cut, because I'm pretty certain there isn't a single hairstyle in Peaky Blinders that my mum would approve of. Least of all, Arthur Shelby's. Doesn't matter how long I leave it on top, if there's anything less than a number 2 on the sides, she will raise her eyebrows, and there will possibly be 1 or 2 comments. Now, my latest barber is quality. This is the second time I've been to see him. He has this way of shooting down my ridiculous Pinterest hairstyles that I show him with kind explanations of why my cow's leg or my crown mean that that hairstyle will never work for me. And then he tells me what he can do. It's at this point that I take my glasses off and I leave my fate in his hands. 5-10 minutes of small talk is all I have to deal with before he shuts up and leaves me to relax and enjoy the process. As much as I love the sound and feel of having my hair cut, I've learned to tune in to what the barber is doing. Purely because even with my eyes open, I can't see shit. I'm just like some blurry blob in the mirror. Now, as barbers go, this one is quite gentle. You know, it really does spoil the vibe for me when they're there bouncing the clippers off your skull. Even the way this one tips my head to get a better angle feels like he's asking, not demanding. 2 haircuts done now, and both of them are impeccable. This fella gets the job as my new barber. 2019 is incoming, and I'm seeing this year out and the new one in with the gang. First up, a classic Reenie gathering. Fab people, fire pits and kitchen dancing. It was awesome, minus the bit where I burnt my fingerprints off. A quality night. I mean, you know it's good when your own phone won't recognise you the next morning. Clemmy takes on the responsibility of hosting the New Year's Eve celebrations, and she puts on a Scandinavian feast. It looks spectacular, and I'm even more impressed when she has some beige options for me. That's when you know you've got a real friend. Clemmy does a classy gathering, let me tell you. And for once, I had something to contribute to the feast. I've been struck by an urge to bake earlier in the week, and so everyone gets their own pack of homemade Welsh cakes. I, of course, got two packs, baker's treat and all that. And maybe it is all the sugar on these Welsh cakes that I've made, but I'm optimistic about the year ahead. A familiar refrain from me, I think you'll agree. But it's not outlandish optimism. I don't think I'm going to be a millionaire by the end of this year. I'm just looking for a steady year. Finally, I'm feeling relaxed at home, and I'm looking forward to getting up and going to work, most days anyway. And Lord knows my love life is still a hot mess, but that's got to come good too at some point, right? Right? I mean, maybe it'll even come good with Ashley again. Who knows? We are spending a lot of time together as January kicks off. And this means at some point, Shane and I are going to have a conversation. Not just because Ashley is now here using both our bathroom and our kitchen, but because as far as he knew, we were proper broken up. Shane's a good listener as it goes, and we've gotten on really well as we've settled into living together. And though there is quite an age gap between us, it is turning out to be good for both of us. Gives us a different take on things. There's no judgment from Shane about Ash coming over and the on-off rekindling whatever nonsense is happening here. He's oddly wise just about being careful I don't get hurt. There's a maturity to Shane that belies his age. And he's also a big hit with the older ladies. I'm pretty sure there's rarely a space in the classes he runs up at the fancy gym. They love him. And he is. He's very charming. And I am quite happy with our setup. I mean, once a week he'll stop exercising. We'll go and get a tub of ice cream and cookies and we'll eat them and bitch our way through a movie. I'll come home from work and he'll make me a drink and we'll chat about our days. He is on top of all of the domestic stuff. I don't have to think about a single thing. As house husbands go, this one is quite excellent. What does he get in return? Well, I share my grooming products. I'm always on hand for fashion advice. And there is one more benefit to being my roommate, and that's my staff discount at the soup place. Shane has weddings and a graduation coming this year. He has need of a suit, and it just so happens we're about to have a massive sale. Rumour has it there was an epic turnout for the sale last year, and I'm intrigued to see how much fuss it causes this year. The ex-hire sale is the place to grab a bargain. Off the rack, one of our suits costs an easy 300 quid. But come sale day, you can pick up all three pieces for less than £100. While the customers are excited to get themselves a deal, I'm excited to get some space back into my warehouse. By the end of the wedding season, the retired items section is heaving. I don't think I could squeeze one more jacket in there. And I needn't have worried. It would appear I will be taking very few of these items back to the warehouse. It was like Black Friday, but the tweed version. The queue went all the way around the block, and there were lots of motivated brides on a budget with their very sharp elbows out. Me and the new boy tried to lend a hand in the shop, only to find ourselves wedged and trapped into the corners of the shop by the crowds. We'd hear a cry for more hangers or more bags, and we'd try and carve a route through to the till. Shane made the wise decision to show up towards the end of this chaos, when the madness had subsided somewhat and we'd been able to pry the new boy out from under a rack of trousers. Shane and I have very differing styles. He's into a very skinny jean, almost as though it's been sprayed on, and that boy likes to show a lot of ankle. At this point, I'm not even sure he owns a pair of socks. So a full three-piece suit isn't very Shane. And actually, what he really just needs is a tweed jacket that he can dress up or down. He's got great shoulders for a jacket too. Then a pair of chinos, as skinny fits as he likes, a white shirt, some gorgeous burgundy maroon accessories, a tie, a pocket square, for example, and this man will be good to go. We hook him up and he is one happy housemate. And Ashley, making sure that there's an upside to her presence, gives Shane a home-cooked dinner whenever she takes over our kitchen. And yeah, it's happening a lot right now. She's coming over more and more and cooking dinner. But we're not back together, okay? Good. Right, just so we're all clear. because, you know, I'm very focused on my tap dancing right now. There's a whole routine. I'm even getting the hang of jazz hands in the proper version, not just taking the piss. And between that and the screen printing, well, I've been busy. So far, we've gotten the hang of the basic set of print skills. So that means we've mostly been printing on white t-shirts. And let's be honest, not everyone loves a white t-shirt. So our next challenge is to work out how to print cool stuff on black t-shirts. Our research has led us down an interesting path. We found a process that actually removes the colour from the t-shirt, leaving a cool sort of bleached vintage look to it, or giving you a light base to which you can layer a colour on top. And it's called discharge paste. And unfortunately, it smells as bad as the connotations of the name would imply. It is just a grim, grim sort of smell. And, well, it looks like every version of cum I've ever seen on TV or film. So it smells rank, it looks rank, and it prints almost invisibly. You need to lean your head to make sure you get it in the right light to check that you've hit the coverage just so. And then you've got to put it through the dryer. And yeah, you've guessed it. Adding heat to something that rank tends to lead to more terrible smells. Oh, and let's not forget the smoke too. The lads from the gym next door come to check we're not actually trying to poison ourselves. And then the first t-shirt drops off the conveyor belt. Oh my God, it looks so fucking good. Totally worth the smell, in my opinion. Susie and our neighbours seem to disagree, but the customers agree with me. These fly out the door. The boss keeps coming with the awesome designs, and I am all about nailing the printing, trying out all the different techniques, discovering all the different types of inks and all the intricacies of our antiquated setup. The more practice I get, the better I get. And so my boss gives me the green light to print my own stuff if I just cover all the costs. I've come a long way from those hand-cut, hand-printed t-shirts back in 2009. I have got a head full of ideas as I head into the weekend. And it isn't your standard weekend. Rini and I, we are going alpaca trekking, which is just a fancy way of saying that we're going to pay a decent amount of money to go walk an alpaca. But bloody hell, how cute are alpacas? Answer, very. After much standing around in a field on a Saturday morning, we are introduced to the whole gang of alpacas before being assigned our very own. Irene and I got Pedro. He was pretty chill, to be honest with you. Somewhat easily distracted, but on the whole, Pedro had this take the humans for a walk thing nailed down. He was a bit of a drama queen about jumping over a small gully, and there was a moment where he just stopped dead as if to say, "What the fuck am I doing with my life?" I think it was the angle of his head and the wild look in his eye that gave me the existential crisis vibes. But he shook it off quite well, did Pedro, and on we went. We made it back to the farm with no further issue. And then we all just hung out, you know, in a field, like you do. Meet a few of the other alpacas, you know, try and take a selfie with one. Not entirely easy. But they are, as I mentioned, really bloody cute. Their coats are made of the most soft wool too. I'm telling you, the urge to cuddle an alpaca is instinctual. How to cuddle an alpaca? Not so much. Because, well, if you approach them from the front directly, it's going to spook them. They will freak out and they will run away. Instead, you've kind of got to sidle up to the alpaca. Now, once you're alongside the alpaca, sort of imagine yourselves both posing for a photo, you know. What you need to do from there is, casually as you like, just slip your arm around the alpaca's neck. You can use the yawn and stretch technique if you want to. Little unnecessary on the alpaca, I'll be honest with you. But just reach your arm around the alpaca and voila, you are now hugging an alpaca who may or may not nuzzle into you, leaving you to spend the rest of your day convincing your flatmate that the share garden outside absolutely has enough space for Pedro to live there. from the affectionate alpacas, I'll be honest with you, the weekend went downhill quite rapidly. What was the culprit this time? The same one. The usual one. No, I haven't learned my lesson yet. I'm still doing the whole online dating thing. I'm not ready to accept that it's just Ashley who's out there for me. So I'm trying a new app. The first catfish I come across was pretty good. I was almost willing to give her the benefit of the doubt until scheduling a video call became the most difficult thing in the universe. The next bunch of matches were the mysterious types, as in it's a mystery why they bothered matching if they're not gonna fucking say anything. God, just something, anything. Just give a girl something to work with, would you? But I was about to realise why they say, be careful what you wish for. There I am, relaxing, after losing the argument that an alpaca is an appropriate pet to have in a flat with a shared garden. And I'm just swiping through profiles. A cute looking woman pops up, Katerina, gorgeous long red hair. I swipe right, and it's a match. I'm feeling pretty low energy, so no fancy opener, just a pretty standard, well, hello there, how's it going? I send the message, I move on, I continue swiping. 10 minutes passes and my phone buzzes. I open and read the message. My name is Katerina. My parents died when I was only 8 years old. Our house was mortgaged for a long time by my father after his death. Open brackets. My mum and dad died on the same day by car accident. Close brackets. The bank came and took our house. I was thrown to the streets. I had to go to an orphanage. My relatives deserted and hated my family because we're Christians and they never cared about us. They were Muslims. I was there for 10 years until a lady came and adopted me. She was a lesbian. She is my ex now. She took me in and we dated. Before then, I was already a lesbian. She was a member of the military, so she introduced me to the United States Army. They were recruiting people for their army, and she asked me to join, and I did. I was deployed to Syria, but she made me serve in Turkey so we can be together. Years later, she was posted to Iraq, and she left me. She has another lover over there. ... But life has to go on. It's not always a bed full of roses. So I'm currently in Syrian military base, rendering a selfless service. That was it. That was the message. I mean, what the actual fuck, Katerina? Not once did she even ask how I am, how I'm doing. No. But seriously, who the fuck starts a conversation like that? And let's consider the options. This woman, oh my God, imagine this woman is real. This incredibly traumatized woman is real. If this is her opener, you just know that the story gets much, much worse. And while I am willing to travel to find love, Syria hasn't really been on the list. Not just because of the Home Office advice not to travel to the area, but, you know, mostly because of that, if I'm honest. If by some unhappy accident Katerina is not a catfish, then I think we can all be quite frank with each other when we say, I am out of my depth here, 20,000 leagues out of my depth. So I think we should all just take a moment and hope that Katerina is a fake, because the world has enough women with awful stories already. This then brings up my next question. If this is a catfish, what on earth does this catfish think this story is going to make me do? Oh, I'm sorry about you being stuck in a war zone, babes, but yeah, let's totally swap nudes. I'm sure you've got time to be taking flap snaps in between the pot shots. I mean, and if it's not nudes they're after, but money, well, you've come to the wrong place for that, my friend. And besides, you know, what are you buying out there in Syria? Or am I helping to liberate you from your military service? You know, as if the basic premise of online dating isn't taxing enough, it's story time with the mad catfish to contend with too. It's moments like this that I wonder where on earth my optimism comes from, where my hope comes from. I can't help but wonder if my confidence in myself is misplaced. It doesn't matter how rational you are, being rejected hurts. being ignored, passed by, never considered, hurts. Honestly, it can be hard to listen to straight women talk about how inundated with matches they are, quality issues of those matches aside. It's hard to see Paul do so little to meet woman after woman. My jealousy of men being able to hook up via Grindr almost instantaneously is real. Very real. It's hard to resist the pull of your ex when it feels like no one else will ever even look your way. And I'd love to say it's confined to the online dating apps that I have been frequenting, but it's not like it's different out in the real world. Doesn't seem to matter what I do, I'm going home alone. After getting into a row about the patriarchy in Subway on the way home, that is. Normally, as drunk as this, I would just keep my head down and try and get home without any drama. But my mate wants a Subway, so here we are in this horribly lit sandwich shop. Everyone in here is drunk. It's 1:30 a.m. on a Saturday night on a British high street. You need to be drunk to be out here at this time. The Subway has its own security guard, which kind of tells you a story all of its own. This particular security guard is a short man. When I say short, I mean he's shorter than me. And I'm about 5'5", 5'6", depending on if you count the quiff or not. So he's short and he has had enough of all of this shit. You can see it on his face. And he has my sympathy. He really does. It is one of the crappier shifts and a slightly crappy job. I get it. But he loses my sympathy when he loses it with a trio of women in the queue in front of us. Now, between you and me, yes, they were incredibly annoying and incredibly loud and incredibly indecisive. But they were harmless. Utterly harmless. They had the giggles about something and it was causing a hold up. Short stuff over here decides that this is crime of the century. He's shouting at them to shut up or get out. He points at one of the women and literally tells her to stop laughing. Which, of course, she cannot do. It takes the women, and us watching in the queue, a few moments to realise he isn't joking. He actually wants her to stop laughing. Still, though, she's in the throes of a fit of giggles and she cannot stop on command. And so our guard, the hero of the hour, grabs her arm and tries to pull her out of the shop. He's aggressive and mean and it is all totally uncalled for, so unnecessary. And without really realising it, I get involved. I step into the guard's personal space to take his focus off the woman he's trying to manhandle. He keeps a grasp of her as he turns to me. I ask him, politely, to let her go. He's furious. You can see it in every muscle in his face. He starts trying to pull her out of the shop again as a response to my polite request. What the fuck is wrong with this guy? And so I ask him, dude, what's wrong? He's so angry, he cannot talk. I ask the queue, what is wrong with this dude? The man, sixth in line, suggested his height may be the root cause of his anger. This does, of course, make the guard angrier, but he does stop pulling the poor woman about. I ask him again to let her go. In fact, I have many questions for this guy, and I begin to ask them all. What's her crime, I ask? Laughing? Having fun? Not knowing what kind of bread she wanted when her first preference was sold out? No matter what I ask, he has no answers for me. And I'll be honest with you, I'm just getting warmed up. Why did you decide to take your frustrations out on her? She hasn't done anything. She's committed no offence. Why'd you pick on her? Is it because she's an easy target? Is it because you thought you could? You did, didn't you? You thought it was okay just to pick on some woman, didn't you? Why'd you think that? Is it because the fucking patriarchy told you it was okay? Is that what it was? Well, I tell you what, sunshine. Fuck you and fuck the patriarchy. Now, if you were reading this on the internet, it would conclude... And everyone clapped. But this isn't the internet, and it is real life. And the only person who clapped was a weird dude. A weird dude in an awful Hawaiian shirt, no less. His endorsement, as happens, wasn't all that helpful. The three giggling women were now much calmer, and they had their footlongs. They were lovely, and they were very grateful to me for my intervention. Unfortunately, my mate's order was taking a little longer, so we now have an awkward few minutes of us all standing there in silence. When we finally left, I could feel the guard's glare all the way down the high street. Ridiculous or not, though, there is something very satisfying about shouting, "Fuck the patriarchy." I mean, it doesn't help that whole angry butch lesbian vibe that you try to avoid quite a lot of the time, but it is satisfying. And in my defence, there is a lot of stuff to be angry about. And it gets wearing at times, you know, being that angry all the time. It corrodes your insides. As the saying goes, it does more damage to you than you'll ever do to others, even if you do get the chance to let it all out. And of course, if you do let it out, then they've got you. And you are, in fact, the angry dyke they've been warned about, that they told everyone you were. Over the years, of course, life has gotten better. I mean, it's far from perfect, but it's gotten better. But even in my late 30s, I still feel like I have to fight the good fight on a daily basis. If there's one thing I wish someone had told me back in the day, be it Doc or someone else, it's that I would have to be relentlessly butch. That not a day will pass without some sort of judgment from someone else. That you will have to defend who you are over and over again. That you won't make sense to people on the first try. And that you will have to do this alone for the most part. You will have to find ways to validate yourself. No one is going to do it for you. Society at large won't do it. And I won't lie, refilling up your own cup can be the hardest part. All I can say is keep seeking out those things and those people that give you the confidence or energy to deal with the hassle of using the women's toilets in public. Keep doing those things that make you feel sexy and try to remember that you're not for everyone, and that's okay. Don't get me wrong, it's not going to feel okay sometimes. The world will require so much of your relentless butchness some days that the endless dating rejection, for example, will be the straw that breaks the camel's back. You'll scream, maybe have a little cry. You'll consider for a fleeting second the ridiculous idea of being a shit femme and wonder if that would be somehow more acceptable, more palatable to them. You'll wonder once more if long hair would help. You'll fall asleep, wake up and realise that you're butch. And there's no other way for you to be. If there was, you'd have done it years ago. And so you'll go to battle all over again. Maybe, like me, on those days when you don't have as much fight, you'll make those small compromises to help other folks out, to maybe give you an easier ride. But even with the good bra on, the misgendering is still rife. The hassle is still there. Doesn't matter what you do, some days, they're just going to be exhausting. I can't lie to you. So it was quite apt, I felt, when our latest print job landed. Our town has got a bit of a strong vintage crowd in it, and one chap in particular has got himself quite the following. Having worn our suits for a number of his performances, he's agreed to do a little show live from our shop. You see, he's got himself a new song, and it's proving popular. You could say he's really caught the mood of the British public. His latest ditty is called No More Fucks to Give. And I tell you, we couldn't print the merch fast enough. And I most definitely had a new favourite t-shirt. To be honest, at this point, I've now got far too many favourite t-shirts. If I've printed it, I've kind of fallen in love with it. I'm going to need a new chest of drawers at this point. And it's not like Shane could object. His wardrobe is also rapidly expanding. Life with my house husband is kind of cute. We've settled into this lovely routine of Sunday night dinners with Phoebe, almost like a couple's date. A decent home-cooked meal and some board games. We alternate the hosting and cooking every week. And despite their weekly losses, these fools have not learnt their lesson. And tonight, they come up me with Trivial Pursuit. All of the wedges. all of them were mine. All mine. Even if it did take me 5 questions to actually win and end the damn game. I blame the vodka, and I do suspect there may have been some cheating amongst them. But my glorious quiz victory couldn't save me from the curiosity that had been raised by Ash and I spending so much time together over the last 2 months. Just last night, in fact, we'd been out together at Skate City in London. And it was clear things were going to keep rolling. Ash and I had a number of roller derby events coming up that we'd be going to together, one of which falls on her birthday. And I figure we're going to have to celebrate somehow. I can sort of tell that Phoebe is dying to ask if we're back together. But I think she knows that that's just too big a question right now. In fairness, it's a question I keep asking myself. If I'm spending all this time with Ashley, kissing Ashley, letting her back into my bed, why am I so resistant to saying we're back together? To being back together? I've got to wonder if it's stubborn pride, simply not wanting to be seen to have made a mistake. Because I still don't think it was a mistake. The Ashley I'm spending time with now is very different to the Ashley I broke up with. I think my hesitancy to get back into something with her, to whether we label it or not, is because I don't know how real these changes are. I don't know if I can trust them. I don't know if I can trust Ashley. And that's all going to take some time. But for now, it's good, and that's enough. It's enough for Ash and I to book a hotel room together for our trip to the Thunderdome. Ash is actually going to get to play there, and I am set to announce with Queen Bee. It's a big tick on both our derby bucket lists. The Thunderdome is in Manchester, and this means that there is only one possible destination for the after party slash birthday party, and that is Canal Street, home to Manchester's gay village. When I talk about things being good with Ash, it's the little changes that mean the most. Because in times gone by, getting ready to go out was always a source of tension. But tonight, Ash starts getting ready in good time. We don't keep our dinner companions waiting more than a couple of minutes. As our main courses arrive, I am a little nervous about the night ahead. We're going to be meeting the rest of Ashley's team, and I'm not sure I'm all that popular with them. Not only am I technically from that other team across town, but I broke up with their teammates, and they were a large part of the support network that picked her up and put her back together. And so they've all been nice enough when I've been around them at games and stuff, but on a night out? I don't really know any of them well enough to predict the outcome of all of this. The combined anxiety of a crowded nightclub, G-A-Y of course, and hanging out with Ash's team meant it took me a few drinks more than usual until I felt relaxed enough to have a decent dance. And her teamies? Lovely. Pure loveliness. They were chatty. They were friendly. They were welcoming. They made space for me in every conversation or every group on the dance floor. But there was an underlying tone that Ashley was one of them now. And I'd better think twice if I thought I was going to treat her badly. It was unspoken, but very clear. And I had no intention of giving the big butch with her arm around Ash reason to show me what she could do off track. The on-track show and aftermath today had been enough. Everybody's made their point. Now can we get on with some drinking and dancing? Over breakfast the next morning, it was clear a good time had been had by all. I'm relieved. Not just that the team had been okay with Ash and I, but I'd gotten on well with everyone. Because this team are going places. They're winning everything. And I want to be there to announce for them on their way up. Especially next weekend, when they're scheduled to play in my hometown against one of my favourite UK teams. Getting to combine a visit home to Mum and Dad with some top-level roller derby. Oh my God, pick me. Pick me, I practically begged the organisers. And they did, which means my announcer CV is starting to look very healthy, and I need all the practice I can get before next month's Euro Cup. The game is absolutely brilliant, and my co-announcer is super involved in the community, and not just here in the UK. Have I ever thought about announcing in Europe, she asks. As she starts to tell me about all the European tournaments that are coming up, I can't help but wonder how far I can take this. I'm still daydreaming about the possibilities as I get back to work that week. I hear a clip of myself on a popular roller derby news account, and I am starting to believe that there's no good reason not to try and take this all the way. I've got a couple of weeks off from the roller derby now. It is all about my buddies and their birthdays. Time to get my socialising on. And for that, I need a haircut, of course. As I mentioned earlier, this is one of those things that helps me in my endeavours to be relentlessly butch. A good hair day can help me minimise the impact of the misgendering or the dirty looks or the hassle I get. Except, for the last 3 days, I haven't been able to get in with my barber. And now I have no time left. And he's not in today. But it's okay. I've seen the other barber's work. She is pretty decent. I'm sure it's all going to be fine. Except, I don't get that barber. I get the new girl. For a start, she does not look like she belongs in a barber's. Out there somewhere is a unisex salon specialising in 4 particular haircuts that is missing her something rotten. All I'm after is a simple enough cut. Short back and sides, leaving a little length on top. Add a bit of texture, you know, for where I wear it styled up. It doesn't take long for me to realise she really doesn't want to cut my hair. And she is making sure I feel it too. But we've begun now, and I am not leaving a barber's with half a fucking haircut. I can already tell it's not the best cut in the world, but so far there's no dramatic issues with it. Eventually, she gets her sulking under control and she soldiers through the rest of the haircut. I try to tune her out and I let my mind drift, forgetting that while I can get a good notion of what's going on with the clippers, when they're cutting the hair on top with their scissors, I can't really feel anything. And this barber, she gives no thought to stopping and checking how much I want to take off the top. She just butchers my barnet, blow dries what's left, and then styles it terribly. Seriously, put me in a stripy polo shirt, a set of braces on my teeth, and I'd look like the sex pest creepy teenage boy you knew at school. The one who uses way too much wet look gel and styles it with a comb. The newest barber does not get my vote. And somehow, despite the disaster that she can see on my head, she's surprised I don't tip her. The only tip I've got is that I really should have waited for my barber. Thank God my hair grows back quickly, I think, as I dig out my snapback collection. Sometimes those butch stereotypes come in handy. Hello, you wonderful lot. Welcome to the new release schedule. It's thrown me off a little bit. I missed you last weekend, but here I am bringing you a new chapter of Tales of a Well-Established Lesbian every fortnight. The show will stay ad-free thanks to my subscribers and donators. Do you want to help keep it that way? Then get yourself over to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/well-established-lesbian, to subscribe from as little as £1. If, like me, you love a good quote, then come and follow me on Instagram at well-established-lesbian as I indulge my fascination with them. Or you could join other listeners on Reddit in our subreddit r/TOAWEL. Share your opinions on the show. Share your feedback or your hot takes. Whatever you want to discuss, you'll find like-minded people there. And if you're feeling super supportive, maybe you could take a couple of minutes out to leave a review or a rating, or just share the show with some other people. Anything you do helps and I appreciate it. But most of all, keep listening. Thank you, as always, for the privilege of your time, and whatever you get up to over the next couple of weeks, take care of yourself.